Radio Vermont, WDEV, takes no responsibility for the opinions or statements made by the House Calls Vermont show host or their guests. The information provided during the House Calls Vermont show is offered only as a public service and should not be used as a substitute for obtaining any professional advice from a licensed professional.
WDEV presents House Calls Vermont. Hosts Jim Bradley and Chris West share their knowledge and expertise on topics specific to the opportunities and challenges of building and renovating in Vermont. Brought to you today by Hannon Home Center, Mason Drive in Waterbury. By Shamrock Painting, painting and custom wood finishing, shamrockpaintingcompany.com. By R.K. Miles, your neighborhood lumberyard with new locations in Barrie, Montpelier, St. Johnsbury, and Waitsfield. By Sticks and Stuff and Swanton Lumber, with locations in St. Albans, Enosburg, Swanton, Derby, and Middlesex. By Curtis Lumber, there's a Curtis Lumber near you. Find out where at curtislumber.com. By Matt Clark's Northern Basement Solutions, for all things basement-y. NorthernNEFoundations.com. By Vermont Home Builders and Remodelers Association. Find them online at HomeBuildersVT.com. And by Poly Construction in South Burlington. One call does it all. They're online at PolyConstruction.com. Your participation today is encouraged. Call the listener line with questions at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 1-877-291-8255. Now, House Calls Vermont with Jim and Chris.
Hey guys, it's the day after Christmas. I'm Chris West here with my colleague Jim Bradley.
Hello everybody.
And we want to welcome all of our regular listeners and new listeners. We want to throw out the number there. If you have a question about a renovation you're doing or just a problem you're having in your house.
New construction.
Yeah. Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. Last week we finished up our two-episode series on indoor air quality, and one of the things we touched on in the first show was the Healthy Homes Initiative, which is a program that's being run through Efficiency Vermont. And we thought that there were some things that were not specific to indoor air quality that were part of the Healthy Homes program that we wanted to highlight. So we're doing an entire show today on the Healthy Homes program, and we're going to dive in deep, and later in the show we'll be having a visit from Steve Spatz, our Efficiency Vermont guy, and so let's take a look at the Healthy Homes program from Efficiency Vermont and what we didn't cover in indoor air quality.
Yeah, why is this so important? The reality is, the home is where you're going to live the majority of your time, or spend the majority of your time, especially during the winter months, or in the southern months summer months when you're in the summer climate, or southern climate. You're going to be locking up the home's windows and doors and then conditioning the air. But rarely is everybody taking into consideration that once you're in that confined space and you've really stopped a lot of the air movement, the contaminants inside, some of the other items inside, can actually make your home less safe. And so we're not trying to cause any undue concern. We're not trying to be alarmist here. We're trying to make the public aware of some of the things that you should consider.
I don't mind being alarmist. I just want to point it out. Jim's the non-alarmist. I'm the alarmist.
But with this, we know that some of this, when we've been on energy audits so many times, home performance assessments, and you see the countenance of the homeowner just drop and change, and as we're discovering things, and we're saying, well, wait, it's all fixable, and you know,
first day is the worst day.
Exactly. And so with that, we want you to be able to address these items. If you have mold issues, if you have pest issues, if you have lead paint issues, asbestos issues, how to handle those things appropriately and why they're so important. The reality is, though, this all goes back to what this show has been about from the very beginning, is building science. Because your house, your commercial building is a system. Just like you have the ability to breathe, so does your house. You have the ability to circulate blood. Your house circulates air, just as you have a nervous system. Your house has an electrical system. All these things, you know, fit together, and you've got to look at this and say, okay, if I'm affecting one side of the house, how will that affect the other? If I'm not staying up on my maintenance program, as we call call it in a nice way, maintenance deferred, which could be rot, which could be, you know, letting other things in the house you don't want to have in. You've got to address those things. And the reason being is it's going to affect the health and safety of the building occupants. You know, when people call us, and I've said this before, when people call us about improving the efficiency of their home, it's like, wait, let's take a step back. We first want to make sure that the home is safe, that it's a healthy home, that anything you're going to do to tighten up the home, you're not going to make another hidden issue worse by not allowing for proper air quality and other issues.
The unintended consequences of work done.
Exactly. Yeah. And we've seen where people didn't address that appropriately and where there's greater failure or greater effect to the building occupants. Then again, you also want to make sure that your building is going to stay durable over time. But once again, all this, like I said, ties together, because if your building's not staying durable, it's not just the investment in the materials that you're losing, it's also now turning around and then putting stress on the health and safety again of the building occupants by introducing mold, rot, fungus, animals into the house that you don't want. And so that's why this is such an important topic. With that, Chris, you know, what are some of the things that you think that would be a benefit, you know, if you do address this? I mean, some of the things are obvious, but literally, some people may not know. What are some of the other benefits that they would have if they did address some of these things in the buildings they're living in?
So it's a litany of things. We're looking at how the indoor air quality and the other bits that we're going to talk about today in the healthy homes affect your health. So you can expand that to all the healthcare costs that you have that are involved or made worse by the issues you might have in your home. We already know that someone who has a compromised immune system is Yes. going to have harder interact with a bad environment in a worse than someone who is healthy, right? There's kind of like the Taoists have this idea that you have this kind of bucket full of, they call it qi, it's just call it health, but you have this bucket full of health, and when you're young that bucket is full, so that when you get sick that sickness takes a little of that out of the bucket until you can regenerate it. Well, when you're have a bad immune system, or you're elderly, or you have other comorbidities, your bucket is just not full enough, and you're getting closer and closer to the bottom of the bucket on that life force, on that vital life force. Now, of course, this is an analogy. I'm not personally saying that this is how it is, but the idea is that a person who has a compromised immune system moving into a house may have a different reaction than someone who is healthy living in that same house. They might not even notice anything wrong with it.
Well, and even with that, though, you look at today's day and age, what we're all dealing with in this time of COVID.
Yep.
You know, you get into an enclosed environment, and some people say, okay, stay at home, and that's going to make things safer. Well, they have also been finding that some of the greater rates of infection have come from people who are indoors, who are staying at home, because you're in this enclosed environment and proper ventilation is not being maintained. But more importantly, some of the other stressors, like Chris was alluding to, are already attacking the body, limiting. I mean, the body's a wonderful thing, you know, and it can do a lot. It can handle a lot of abuse. As many people know, it can handle a lot of toxins and process those. But there comes a limit. And when you get to that limit and it can't process anything more, and then all of a sudden on top of that, you put a virus, then the scales are totally out of balance, and you're going to get sick, and you're going to have major problems that could be catastrophic. So setting up a healthy environment, not a completely sterile environment, but a healthy environment is crucial for, you know, when you consider the building in which you live.
So some of the things that come along with fixing the types of problems that we're talking about are basically the things you'd expect, right? Improve durability and comfort of your home. You get an energy cost savings if the things that you do in some way change the infiltration, that uncontrolled air leakage, or improve the insulation or the ventilation by using what we've been talking about as a balanced ventilation system. You also are going to have lower energy costs if you're, you know, increasing the efficiency by those steps. So what is it that the Healthy Homes Initiative has that is kind of, you know, where do we start if we're interested in finding out how healthy our home is? Jim.
Well, basically, there's several fundamental principles here. One, you want to keep it dry, okay, because you want to keep the house dry, because Chris, my colleague here, has told many customers before, you know, as building science seems to change, it's more so our understanding of it changes or evolves and expands. And so what was good in the 80s or back even further isn't good today because our building materials are changing as well. So this is a fluid.
And the tightness.
Exactly. Right. So in many houses, by default, are becoming tighter. And so that affects, on the other side of the scales how the whole house is going to perform. And so first you got to keep it dry, because certain assemblies, like standard stud construction assemblies, have a very low tolerance, especially when you get engineered products like OSB, which I call vertical mulch, others do too. When you get those in place and you get a water load inside that wall because of vapor diffusion or bulk water infiltration, it's going to decimate that very quickly. In fact, regular dimensional lumber, if it stays wet for a 12-month period in a row, it starts to rot. OSB, it's even quicker. But other assemblies like straw bale hay construction, adobe, I know it, you may laugh, but adobe actually has the ability to handle more volume of water within the walls and then dry out without degrading, but not regular construction. So you got to keep it dry. If you don't keep it dry, many people don't know this, but carpenter ants, here's one of those strange facts. Carpenter
brings
ants,
me back to the fae.
Yeah, carpenter ants are not attracted to sick wood. What they're, they're not going to eat that wood. What they're doing is they sense moisture inside the house, and they also smell the rotting wood. So they know that they're not going to eat it, but they can actually easily make a nest within that wood. So they're going to go inside there, tear it apart, make a nest, and then go elsewhere to eat. But then they're going to sense the water that draws them in. They sense that there's a easy nesting ability. And so if you kept your house dry and you kept it durable, you're going to have much better performance. So you got to keep it dry. You got to keep it clean. If you're leaving food scraps out, whether they're crumbs or whatever, the mice are going to come in. The cockroaches are going to come in. Not as prevalent in our area, but other areas that they are. And they're going to feed off of that, which makes the whole building less healthy. You got to keep it pest-free, like I said, but you don't want to just go in there and take off the shelf the most...
Don't call the Orkin man every time you have a problem. Because we had a client who was calling the Orkin man. The Orkin man was coming and killing the carpenter ants, and it ended up not getting rid of why the carpenter ants were coming, so they kept coming. It was like a year of having the Orkin men come and kill the ants and still not getting any relief. So you got to deal with the source of what's happening and not just the symptom.
And you also got to be careful what type of toxins you use to kill these pests, because that could actually increase the challenges inside the house for the building occupants. But you want to keep it safe. The number one accidents in the home for children are going to be falls. They're going to be lead paint type of poisoning and other issues like that, and even CO2 or CO poison, I should say. So you have to make sure that the building occupants are safe, not just kids, but also adults. And so we're going to go into some of those items and what to look for. You also want to keep out the contaminants like VOCs, volatile organic compounds.
We were talking about that last week about if you start your car in the winter and your car's in the garage, and the barrier between the garage and where your kitchen is, which usually very next to each other, is not keeping the VOCs out, then you can actually deal with some VOC issues without knowing it.
Yeah, that and also paints. We don't want to throw out that last quarter gallon of paint because we got to touch things up. Totally understood. Yeah. But when you bring that inside of the building space, the thermal space, that's going to then cut off gas into the rest of the space. You got to be really careful about that. Ventilation issues, once again, mechanical ventilation that's balanced is really crucial.
Much better than exhaust only.
Exactly, because it keeps that airstream much cleaner, and it filters, not filters out, but it removes a lot of those particulates from the air, keeping the building occupants much safer. And you also want to keep this maintained, as I alluded to earlier, because what you don't maintain is, what you don't manage is going to manage you. So if you don't manage your home, if you don't maintain your home, it's going to eventually tell you, you got a much bigger problem that's much more expensive on the other side.
We have our good friend Steve Spatz from Efficiency Vermont joining us. And welcome, Steve.
Steve.
Gentlemen, how are we doing today?
Doing well, sir. You?
Doing pretty well.
That is good. I'm doing all right, thanks.
Good.
So we're revisiting the Healthy Homes Initiative. We did talk about it briefly 2 weeks ago when we were doing our first episode of the Indoor Air Quality episode. But after looking at the program more carefully and looking at what we didn't get covered, there's quite a bit in there that has nothing to do with indoor air quality, although obviously indoor air quality is important. Can you give us a bit of a background on the other things that the Healthy Homes Initiative look at?
Well, are we talking about beyond some of the other things that you'd be testing for and evaluating within the home?
That, and also, different types of contaminants or aging in place. I think that's also a part of, mm-hmm. of the Healthy Homes Initiative, things like that.
Sure. I mean, there's many things that, come into play, and I think you guys have touched on some of those as well so far today. So just the things that we store in the home, the way that we store them, where we place things that could be sensitive to the occupants, things to be concerned about around pest control, accessibility, to things that need maintenance within the building is another big part of this as well. You know, you can't do a good job of maintaining things that need that in the house if they're not accessible and easy to work on. So, you know, especially if you're talking about aging in place as well, access to inconvenient places becomes a factor. You know, older homes where it's tough to get access to things like the basement, and the basement in and of itself may be harmful to the occupants because it hasn't been attended to over the years. A lot of water infiltration, things decaying, rodents and other critters that are looking to bed down in their winter home with you as well. So
most of those are mammals. So yeah.
Right.
Well, I've got three cats, a dog, two kids, and a wife. So I got plenty of mammals in the house.
There you go.
Yeah.
So you also have plenty of off-gassing creatures.
Absolutely.
Hey, off-gassing. Don't you just blame that on the dog?
Well, we can't blame Fido for everything.
Yeah.
But that is something that, you know, certainly most people maybe overlook, and there's other things. It's not just VOCs that we can be sensitive to in the home. But depending on, you know, combustion equipment is a big thing in the winter, you know, and some things that may just think to be harmless actually can be insidious in the background. And when you start to take a step back and consider things that may be symptomatic and think about what triggers those symptoms, you can start to put the puzzle together. You know, I noticed that with our home, where before I had done some significant work on our home and with our children as well. As it got to be later in the fall and we started to use the wood stove and we started to close up the house and be in the house more than outside, waking up in the morning very congested, having a hard time getting through the morning without sneezing 100 times. Kids have some similar, you know, effects as well. Another thing that happened in our house, from an anecdotal standpoint here too, is that we would start to set off our carbon monoxide detector in the fall. And that was a consequence of our wood stove, using our wood stove on nights that were not particularly cold, and the fire just kind of smoldered out during the night. And
well, Steve, the easy solution to that
creates this factor, I think.
The easy solution to that is you just take the CO detector down, take out the batteries, and throw it in the closet. Then it's not going to go off anymore. That's what other people do.
That is the time-tested method I've seen, unfortunately, more than I'd like to share. But
agreed. And, you know, yeah. I wanted to key on something you said, Steve, that I think is really important, is that as humanity, we basically look at the, if I get my hand cut off, I'm going to go get stitches and hopefully get it reattached. If I'm going to get burned, I'll move my hand away from the fire. If I have a, you know, big carbon monoxide event where at least we get out and not die, then we're going to want to look at, hey, maybe we should have changed the batteries in the CO detector, or we should address the problem with the combustion safety equipment. But it's the small things that, once again, we're not trying to cause undue concern, that do affect us. And so sometimes what happens is people end up with a presenting medical problem that they don't really know the source. And I'm not saying this is always going to be the case, but so many times it does contribute to the ailment that can help the overall health of the individual if they were to address these things up front, or once they're known, they address them, and it could improve things all the way around, I think.
And that's one of the aspects of healthy homes as far as a programmatic effort that is being pursued through the Department of Health, through the EPA, through BPI, and work that Efficiency Vermont is trying to facilitate here as well, which is, you know, as people present those symptoms and there's those comorbidities, as we call it, the healthcare industry can help to identify situations where the occupants may be chronically exposed to poor indoor air quality, which is the reason why they're in the doctor's office in the first place.
Right.
So there's definitely efforts to make those connections where, you know, as people go to see the doctor for respiratory ailments, they start to ask inquiring questions, and hopefully we can get a system in place where we can start to link up those people with certain chronic conditions so that professionals can come into the home and take a look at what what exists and what may be triggering the symptoms that they're experiencing, which brings them to the doctor in the first place.
So Steve, one quick question I have for you is, as Efficiency Vermont is concerned, granted they really promote efficiency, they promote the energy assessments, home performance assessments, those are great. But from a healthy homes, I know perspective, I know that's growing. And I read on the website only recently that they're still offering, but you know, times of COVID makes things a little bit different. But going forward, what are some of the programs? Are they actually offering the healthy home assessment at no cost to the Vermont consumers, or is there a slight cost to that? What can you tell us about what Efficiency Vermont's offering in this regard?
At this point, there's been a lot of work done on this front, and efforts made within the healthcare community and the state as well, trying to connect the resources for the evaluation and support of homeowners with the healthcare industry. There were some initiatives that were piloted. There were some further plans to take this further, and some of those have been suspended for the time being based on some situations within the healthcare industry in the state, and also obviously COVID has not made that situation any easier. We have, been touching on these issues through the virtual home energy visits that have occurred through the button-up program.
Right. Sure.
And other outreach such as that. So it's certainly something that's front and center on our radar and a priority item within Efficiency Vermont, and we're patiently working through the channels of trying to get this a little bit more integrated out there, again, with the healthcare industry, and then also just something that our contractor network is able to provide as well.
Great.
So the fair majority of our BPI certified contractors that are in our home performance network have also received the Healthy Homes Evaluator distinction, which basically takes their expertise and learning about buildings as a system and incorporates some of these other effort measures to be cognizant of that impact indoor air quality in healthy homes.
Great. Well, Steve, thanks so much again for calling in. And as usual, at the end of our chat, I ask you to throw out the website information so people can have that to hand.
Absolutely. So that'd be efficiencyvermont.com. And if you have questions about healthy homes, you can find under services some information on that under home energy assessments. And you can also have that conversation and look for that designation when you do a contractor search on their website as well. If you look for our home performance contractor network, you'll see the designation for which contractors have that Healthy Homes Evaluator certification as well.
Great. Thanks again so much. And until next week, Steve Spatz from Efficiency Vermont.
Thanks
again.
Steve. Yeah, thank you.
All right.
Okay, now we have a call from Jim in Williamstown. Jim, go ahead with your question.
Yes, hi. I've got a question for you guys about these ventless interior propane house heaters. How toxic are they?
Okay, so
you didn't see it, but Jim just did a
hands up. So basically, here's the thing. Granted, you have a cook stove. Some people have cook stoves. Many people have cook stoves that are propane fired, natural gas fired, and that effluent, or basically that burns and it gets into the airstream. That does add to particulates in the airstream. Where things become a little more difficult with one of those space heaters. This summer, I was at a house and was doing an energy assessment for a client up in the Northeast Kingdom, and I had a CO detector on my side. Keep in mind, they'd had the entire house opened up, and I was just walking around the house, got near one of those heaters of which you speak, and they had a pilot light going, which goes all year round, which can burn 50 gallons to 70 gallons a year just by a pilot light, so what a waste. But that was going, and it started setting off my CO detector, which is more sensitive than your normal CO detector, but it started setting it off, and I'm going, oh my gosh, this is unsafe, and so then if we were to tighten up the home, that would even be worse. Even to the point where if you have one of those in place and you're looking for rebates and to get into part of the program with Efficiency Vermont, they cannot incentivize a project if one of those remain, because it does add to the particulates in the carbon monoxide into the airstream, and is not a good thing whatsoever.
Think about it like this, Jim. If you were to put in the exhaust from your car into your house, That's basically what you're doing. If you have a propane heater and that heater is not vented anywhere, then you are the chimney. And there, and it's a really bad idea. It's illegal to install them in the state of Vermont.
So how can they sell them?
Yeah, well, that's one of
that. A lot of them out of state. A lot of them are out of state salespeople that will sell you these things and they bring them into Vermont. Is some of the things that we've been seeing recently.
Right, and you should, if you have HVAC. Expert that you work with, they should, you know, be up on the fact that that's not allowed in the state. But I see all kinds of stuff that's not allowed in the state happening left and right. It's not an amazing thing that's happening.
You can buy them in Tractor Supply right here in Montpelier.
Yeah, so there are specific carve outs for RVs and things, right? So
okay.
there may be equipment that is available in the state that is
possibly shops too.
Yeah,
workshops.
Like a Modine or something, right?
Yeah.
You have certain types of heaters that are allowed to be used under very specific situations, but not in a residence. That's just asking for trouble.
And once again, whether or not it's legal, it's not really safe, and will it cause a catastrophic health crisis immediately? No. But once again,
it could,
but not necessarily. But what it's going to do is it's going to apply that extra stress on the body of the occupants, and that can then make them more susceptible to other items in the home or viruses or colds, whatever. That's why it's a concern.
I've never seen a new one installed. I've always seen, you know, somebody bought a house and someone in the 70s put one in and they just never took it out. We were in this house where a ventless propane heater was installed in a faux chimney. So you go in and you think it's being vented, and we were like, well, where's this? We're looking at the roof and there's no chimney. We're like, where's the combustion gas is going? And it ended up that it was just a surround and they just faked a chimney, and it was shocking to us because we're like, wait a second, you know, you're basically, you know, sucking your air off of the exhaust of a car, which everybody knows is a bad idea.
Yep. Okay, so with that, thank you, Jim, for the call.
Yeah,
definitely.
Thanks, Jim.
And also, at this point in time, we're going to be looking at, you know, Jim brought up a very interesting topic as far as the combustion equipment safety.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of these other concerns that we're looking at is when you go and evaluate a home is the combustion equipment venting appropriately?
Right.
Not just an unvented, but let's say it's an oil furnace or atmospherically vented, which means it basically has a chimney and just passively as the heat, you know, warms up in the system and the exhaust comes out, it just passively goes up the chimney and out. But there could be obstructions that stop that or impede that progress. And let's say the draft by which that happens is a strong draft. So
the draft of a chimney is how strong the negative pressure is because of the stack effect. Chimneys work because of the stack effect. So there's wind going across the top of the chimney and there's just hot air rises going through the stack effect. And if the draw is not high enough, then of that chimney, just the draft of the chimney isn't high enough, then you can have backdrafting.
And if you get like rodents, birds.
You
know, forming nests inside these things. Now, granted, you think it would kill them. Well, if you've got 9 months out of the year or 6 months out of the year where you're not using that, more so 6 months or less, then that is a place where they may nest. And so when it starts up again, it may kill them. But what they left behind was the nest. So it impedes the flow or the drafting of the system. And then you go ahead and maybe tighten up the house, make it more efficient or less leaky. Then you turn on your high-efficiency dryer that has
300 CFM.
Yeah. Yep. And your bath fans. And all of a sudden, next thing you know, you're getting combustion gases right into the airspace, which could be very deadly. At the very least, it's going to affect the building occupants, depending on the fuel type as well. And so it's just good to make sure you're taking a look at that, especially with, you know, as was mentioned earlier by Steve Spatz. He said, you know, with the wood-fired stove, that they would start that up. And if it wasn't drafting appropriately, especially under the right conditions, so let's say, so, you know, 30 or above, and inside it may be 60, 70, and then you start up the system and it may not draft appropriately, especially in the EPA-approved two-tier burn type of thing to make them more efficient.
With the catalytic converter.
Yeah, it obstructs some of the airflow when it does that because it's trying to reburn some of the unburned combustion gases to make it more efficient. But if under the right circumstances, it can backdraft, and so you've got to be very careful about that. One thing that we say for whether it's a regular heating system, propane, oil, natural gas, pellet, wood, is that you have outside combustion air brought into the house to the actual firebox or to the actual system itself. So what's happening is, as the exhaust is leaving the building, the air that it needs to actually, you know, complete the combustion process is brought in from the outdoors directly to the unit. So it's not just passively leaking into the rest of the house. Though we did see one 2 weeks ago that, they brought the makeup air was brought from the interior space, which was being sucked down through an abandoned chimney that was just an open hole into the space. And so that's not very effective, and that's not what we're talking about. No. You want to make sure, once again, it's still efficient, still safe, but it's a neutral effect on the house depressurization. So it's going to make the system perform better, make sure it's safer, and you're not going to have these backdrafting problems with that
your
type.
Your efficiencies are going to be better. I mean, basically, so the three types of venting. We have atmospheric venting, which is where the combustion air is brought in from the room that the appliance is in. You have power vented, where there's a fan blowing the air out of the chimney, which then creates a large low pressure that's then the combustion gases are from the room. And then you have sealed combustion, which is what Jim was just explaining, which is the best kind. You have a duct that goes from the outside to the firebox. The firebox then uses the oxygen to burn, and it goes out a chimney, and that's the get your best efficiencies and the lowest possibility of high carbon dioxide and other types of backdrafting issues.
Yeah, another one of the things to consider with combustion equipment is actually, especially if it's natural gas, or if it's going to be oil, it can be too, because it can be leaky, but propane. So propane and natural gas, you want to do a leak detection on that system. Now, most times when they're installed, your technician should be doing that anyway to make sure that all the joints are tight, the piping is sound, and you're not going to have passive leaks into the house or even outside the house, because let's say it leaks outside. Well, that's not really a huge danger to the indoor occupants, but you're losing money at the same time.
And in the end, it could be an explosion danger.
Exactly. But with that, you know, granted, we do very thorough energy assessments and home performance assessment. I have to admit, there are some times we've been in a hurry and it's been a long, long test. And that question goes across my mind saying, okay, I know we got to test this. Should I? Every time that question pops in my head, now granted, we're going to default. We're going to do it anyway. Yeah. But every time that question's popped in my head, we go do the test. We find a leak. Yeah. It's just, hey, whatever. It's great because we found the leak for the customer. And the way we do it, we use a really expensive leak detector. We get it to go off if it does go off. And then we take the really sophisticated soap bubbles and we'll put that around where because we don't want a false positive. And then we do that. We see the fact that there is a leak because the bubbles in, you know, when you use the soap mixture with the water, it'll create bubbles. And if there's bubbles, that means something's leaking out of those pipes. There was one time we were doing a film for YouTube on an energy assessment, and it's like we planned it. We actually were doing this and say, this is what we would do. We would check for leaks. And lo and behold, we found a leak inside the house and one outside the house. And, you know, just do the math. This could be very catastrophic if the whole bottom floor, the basement where the heating system is, fills with gas. Someone comes downstairs, turns a light on. That spark causes an ignition and an explosion. And you're done.
Yeah.
And so it's really important to get that checked out as well. Most leaks are small enough that we're not going to cause a huge issue, but any leak is unacceptable. So it's definitely important to get that out. And, you know, Chris, when we're looking at healthy homes, I know one thing that's big for our housing stock is, you know, especially with these older homes, when they wanted to use a more durable paint, especially on trim and kitchens and bathrooms, they would elect to go with something that they thought at the time was a great solution.
Yep.
Lead paint. You know, they put lead in the paint because it was durable.
It
made it flexible. Yep. So it lasted longer, and so much so that a lot of it still exists today. So yep. What are we going to be looking at when it comes to lead paint in houses, Chris?
So I think the State Department of Health and the Arby's rules say that if you're the RRP, which is the National Lead Safety Rules, say that if you're going to be disturbing anything more than 6 square feet of known lead paint area during a renovation or any kind of fixing, that then you have to use these very stringent RRP rules.
It's actually dropped now. It was 6 square feet, but the new rulemaking, I believe, made it down to 1 square foot.
Okay, so basically, if you're touching anything in your house that has lead paint on it,
sure.
I want to be very clear. The law is very clear as well. You can do anything you want as a private homeowner, but anybody who's paid even a Coke to do any work in your house has to follow these rules, or it's $35,000 per first offense.
And with that, part of the examination of it, there are these wonderful, they look like cigarettes, but they are actual lead test kits that you can get. You break it open. There's two vials in there. You break it open, and then you take it over a suspected area where lead paint is after making a cut into it and exposing the substrate underneath. And if it turns red, it's lead. Yeah. Hard to do when it's a red-colored place.
Yeah.
You're not gonna see them, but keep in mind, that cannot If it comes back a negative, that there's no lead, you can't let that rule it out.
Yeah.
You can confirm a positive, but you can't rule out a negative with one of those devices. But they're pretty inexpensive, and they do sell them over at the paint store.
And the hardware store, pretty much anywhere.
Exactly.
Yeah, you can get those.
But now, with the rulemaking that just came out, one of the requirements is that you have an XRF scan.
Oh, that's the nuclear scan.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you have to have one of those to be used to verify whether or not there's lead paint on the areas in which you're working. That's just some new stuff that came out this year. On the other side of it, where it used to be that you could self-certify once you're done, if you've been trained in the proper handling of lead contaminants as a contractor, painting or, you know, construction contractor, you could go ahead and self-certify that everything was clean by doing the proper checks and balances. That's no longer the case. What they're saying now is that you actually have to hire a lead paint certified inspector to come by and clear the work and clear the space to make sure it's safe at the same time. And so, yes, prices have gone up, but there's a reason for it at the same time, because the state is saying they want to make sure that things are safe. I wanted to come back to a couple things. You know, some people don't know that over 60% of Vermont's housing stock does have lead paint. So it's something to definitely be concerned about.
I think that's low, but at least 60%.
Anything that was built prior to 1978, including 78, is going to be caught up in this. But you could have still had somebody who had leftover paint that they used in a newer house at the same time.
Just in general, instead of doing a lead paint test on some projects, we just assume this is an 1890s Victorian, it's full of lead paint. Unless something happened between then and now where all the trim was ripped out.
Yeah, and so with it, lead paint, some people say, well, why is lead paint unhealthy? Sure, it's a poison, but why is it a poison? One thing you got to be concerned about is that it's sweet to taste. And so you got a toddler running around the house. They see a little bit of chipping paint that's not stabilized. They go ahead and pick up a piece. Hey, it's sweet. And it does taste sweet, unfortunately. And they'll say, let's try a little bit more and a little bit more. Then you've got some major concerns with developmental issues. If you're a person, homeowner, that wants to do your own project, and you say, oh, I got lead paint on the outside, so I'm just going to go out there. I'm going to be scraping away. No respirator. You get it on your clothes. You bring it into the house. You affect others, but you also affect yourself and can cause some real dangerous issues with hypertension. I know that there was a place in Colchester where a painting crew was doing the work, and one individual had super high blood pressure and had to be admitted before he passed. And so that, you know, he did not pass, but before he passed, they had to be admitted and take care of it. So you got to be really careful with these. But the other thing is, too, when you're doing projects yourself, this is not necessarily the new construction part of it, but you got to be aware when you're doing renovations as to what are those contaminants out there. And if I do good work to make a bigger space, to replace some items in the house, you know, whether it be sheetrock or whatever, what could be in there? And you just take the precautions. Don't be overly, you know, afraid, but take the proper precautions, you know, putting a dust barrier up, making sure you're cleaning the floors appropriately, not using a regular shop vac, because that'll then blow everything around the house at 180 miles
HEPA,
an hour.
HEPA.
And a HEPA filter inside of a shop vac does not qualify as a true HEPA vac.
No.
Just because a filter can filter that, the design of the shop vac doesn't allow for proper HEPA filtration. With that, though, You do, when you're renovating, you do have concerns with lead. You also have concerns with asbestos. And asbestos is in more things than we are really aware of. We talked about it being in vermiculite insulation, but you can also find it in the 8x8 tiles that were made, a lot of them back in the late 60s and early 70s. They're, like I said, it's usually an 8x8 tile.
Floor tiles, yeah.
Yeah, floor tiles, thank you. And more like a linoleum type, not a porcelain type. And on the back of it, there was this black-colored mastic, and that would also have it in there. Much to my surprise, you know, I knew it was in a lot of different things, but this year we had a home that was being torn down, a camp being torn down, so a new home could be built, and we had it tested by Claypoint Associates, and they came back and allowed us to find that the sheetrock, the mud, the tape, and the caulking around the windows all tested positive for asbestos. So these things, you know, why is asbestos important? Because once again, it has been determined that even a simple fiber of asbestos can, in certain individuals, cause mesothelioma, lung cancer, things like that, 10, 20, 30 years down the road. So it's something you just, once again, want to take proper precautions with, and either have a professional remediate it, which is usually the case. If you do it yourself, you better be doing line and verse, the proper PPE, which is personal protective equipment, and masking off the space really effectively, not just closing the door and calling it good.
You have to build, according to RRP, you build an airlock that you clean your shoes off every time you go through it.
It's very depressurized space.
Yeah, yep. Very, very significant measures have to be taken to ensure we're not cross-contaminating the spaces where we think are good with the spaces that we know are contaminated.
So when doing the do-it-yourself projects, make sure you're taking the proper precautions. Yep. Follow the Vermont Health Department's website guidelines on all these contaminants. And at the other side of things, make sure the good work you're doing really is great work, and everyone's safe and healthy to enjoy it on the other side of things.
That's what we want to prevent. We want to prevent people spending 10 or 20 hours working on a project thinking that they're doing good work and not having done what the best building science says we should do. So if you have questions about that, send us an email at housecallsvermont@gmail.com. And also, if you have questions that maybe we answered in a previous show, we do have videos on our YouTube. That is our YouTube channel. Go to Google and just type in House Calls Vermont YouTube and should bring the channel up. There are things that are not contaminants that are also dangers in the home, or things we have to look out for.
Sure.
And one classic one is knob and tube wiring. So,
or just wiring that somebody said, hey, I can do this on my own.
Right, right. What is knob and tube? When electricity first came to houses in the 1920s, alternating current electricity, because of course there was direct current before that, that when you open up a wire, you're going to have one white wire and one black wire, and sometimes a green wire, but that wasn't what they were doing at the time. So what they did with knob and tube is they have insulation around the wire, which these days is usually plastic, but at the time was a cotton weave. Yep. And that cotton weave, you had one wire that was running from a ceramic head to ceramic head. That was an isolator that would allow you to run the power through. And then about 6 inches to the side was the second wire. So it wasn't like one wire where you have a white wire and a black wire. You had one wire that was the common, one was the neutral, and they just ran through your attic usually. And we find them all the time, and they're still active. And that is scary. Not that if you leave them in place and don't touch them, that everything's going to not be okay, because what causes the trouble is when you move those wires at all, that cotton has become so brittle that it just falls off, leaving exposed wires, which everybody understands is a bad idea.
And one thing, in older housing stock, when you go to dense pack a wall, so you want to make sure it's insulated, so you've got this small cavity in there, and you'll have sometimes active knob and tube still running inside that cavity. And if you put the actual insulation tube inside there and push around, because you're doing it pretty much blindly, and you're trying to push around and get through obstructions, you could actually make, as they say in Ghostbusters, don't cross the streams.
Don't cross the streams!
You could cross the streams, cause a fire, cause catastrophic failure. So you want to be really careful. And one of the things that we've seen far too often is that somebody will have electrical work that all the Romex, the new stuff, the yellow stuff, sometimes the white or the orange, depending on the voltage, looks great, was installed really well. But then the final terminus point where it connects into the wire that goes into the wall just, you know, basically junctions onto the old knob and tube, and so it's still active. And that's not a great way to handle things if you want to do long-term improvements.
So if you're doing electrical work, first of all, we do not recommend that people do their own electrical work. There are laws in the state that require that you use someone who is trained properly in electrical work. So we're going to recommend that. However, if you're in your attic and you see these two wires about 6 inches apart that run from a ceramic knob to a ceramic knob, that's knob and tube. And that is something you should have looked at, because you can, if your house starts settling in a way it hasn't before, that could destroy this insulation around the wires and cause an issue.
Another good reason not to use that extra attic storage space as storage, because, you can put that big box on top of this, and once again, possibility of fire down the road. Another thing that we wanted to talk about is some of your well water, the water that you're bringing into your house. Granted, most of this water that we have in Vermont is pretty healthy, but there could also be bacteria in there, especially after the winter and you had a flooding event. We actually had this happen in our house where it was such an event where there was a lot of extra high water, and then we had a deluge of rain, and it flooded over the top of our well cap. And so we had to get it sterilized afterwards just to make sure the water quality was good. There was one house that I built a couple years back in Red Rock on Point Red Rock in Colchester. And, you know, beautiful home, great home. But then they've got every water treatment thing possible there, system possible, because we found ancient sea salts in there that were making the water too salty. We found that the water was hard, so they had to be treated. They had to have a reverse osmosis system put on. At the same time...
Might as well just, you know, distill your own water.
Well, pretty close. Get the cisterns out and catch the rainwater. But then also with that, they had, which I had not seen before, but we had the water would have pockets of air in it. Well, it wasn't air. My Chevalier drilling, they put the well in for us. They said, hey, go get a cigarette lighter and try to light it. I said, come on, what are you talking about? Which leg are you pulling? I'm looking down. And come to find out, as I got the cigarette lighter, big orange fireball came up out of the actual faucet that I had to try to put out, and it was actually methane. And so methane is under the ground too, especially when you get a lower water table in a dry year, it's more susceptible to that. So you got to be careful with that and get your water properly tested just to make sure if you're drinking that without filtration that it's safe to drink at the same time.
I want to point out that it's not a bad idea if you are on well water to have your well water tested every 3 to 5 years. This is something you can do at the Department of Health. I do it on a regular basis. You can tell them it does cost. It's about $120. But that $120 will do the entire biological radon. Radon gas in your water is a thing. You can actually have radon in your water. Lead tests, so they test all of the possible contaminants and give you a reading back, and that's highly recommended. It's about $120 for testing everything, and doing it once every couple of years is not a bad idea.
You know, another thing that we already talked about in the past couple of weeks, ventilation, pretty exhaustively, but that's another key component of healthy homes, is to make sure, once again, you have balanced mechanical ventilation so you're not sucking air back into the house from unknown spots. It's actually a known spot, and you're getting particulates and other hazards out of the house at the same time. But another thing that people don't really think about as part of healthy homes is going to be your accessibility concerns.
Yep.
You know, aging in place. If we've got a two-story home with a basement, we're just finishing up a renovation with the scariest three sets of stairs I've ever seen inside of a personal residence, where you walk out a door and I've seen some of these before, but never three in one house. You walk out of the door and the actual stair to go down starts halfway in between the door.
Ah.
So think about your guest at night, and right, you come into that house and you're groggy, you're going up to use the facilities, and you step out of the door and you fall down the stairs and may not get back up. I've fallen and I can't get up. But then also the customer had a basement set of stairs, same thing, but it was a pass-through going into a tool room at the same time, and you're a very narrow space at the very top.
So like no landing.
No landing. Yeah. So what we did, really kind of a neat thing, is we were able to put like a flip-up hatch. So it's a very stable surface when she wants to go through into the tool room, but then we're able to move the hatch up very easily on a string, and it's hinged, and so it comes up out of the way so she can then safely go down the basement stairs into the basement. But as you're aging in place, a lot of people, you know, the term single-level living, yep, is so that you don't have a lot of hazards. There's also a rule in the state called the visitability law. Not a visibility law, but visitability. That means somebody can come and visit who might be in a wheelchair or might have challenges stepping over more than a half-inch tall entry. And so you have to make at least one entrance in the home accessible to that end.
The ADD requirements.
The ADA requirements,
ADA,
yes.
Sorry.
And so with that
American
also...
American with Disabilities Act, yeah.
Yes. And so when you're doing this in new construction or renovations, you want to be able to make sure that you're putting the appropriate blocking that you may not need for decades to come.
Right.
But, you know, the standard heights for where that blocking goes, whether it be grab bars or other devices that can help you, you make the countertops at the right height, you make hallways at the right width, a lot of those things, doorways the right width, a lot of those things can be addressed now, because usually a wheelchair needs 30 inches clear space. That doesn't mean you use the 30-inch swing door, because then that only has about 28 inches clear.
Hit your fingers. You've done that. You've been carrying something through a door and hit your fingers because the door was just wide enough. You need an extra couple of inches there.
Yeah, and so, you know, if people are willing to put blocking in to hang their cabinets, why not put the blocking in place in the bathrooms, in the shower areas,
yep,
at the right heights?
For grab bars later on.
So, yeah, exactly. So it makes us what could be a difficult installation, getting an anchor point, a very simplistic installation at the same time. But I know, Chris, we still wanted to touch on one more thing about the indoor air quality.
Right. So I wanted to say blocking is literally just a 2x4 or 2x6 that's put in,
sure,
the wall that you then have. That's a nailing base if you want to add something later. I just,
yep,
want to throw that there. Yeah. So a couple of weeks ago, we got our indoor air quality monitor, and we said that we're going to start an indoor quality survey with you, the listeners. And I asked members of the listening public to send in their emails to housecallsvt@gmail.com. And so far, we've got got six people who have signed up for the study. So in the next week, we're going to be contacting you. Thank you very much for participating. And we'll be contacting you about how we're going to get this indoor air quality monitor to you. And we're going to have a little piece of paper that'll go with it so you can log where in your house it was and what the conditions were, door open for the bedroom, door closed, like we were talking about. And so we're moving forward with that survey. If you're still interested in having your indoor air quality tested with the IAQ air monitor, give us that the email at housecallsvt@gmail.com, and we'll add you to the list. And by the end of the survey, hopefully sometime in March, we'll be able to publish the results and let you all know whose house was healthiest and how it all went. Of course, protecting everybody's names.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, we may use the results, but we're not going to use your name.
No. This is you are anonymous to us. We'll just be using Home 1, Home 2, Home 3. So we're going to be rolling that out after the new year. We're almost, look, it's the end of the year. Here we are. We started on October 31st. Here we are. It's a couple of days before the end of 2020. A lot of people will be happy to see this one go into the history books. Got to say that I'm looking forward to 2021 as hopefully the end of our lockdown and problems with COVID. We can all cross our fingers. I did want to send a shout out to Ken Squire. We're thinking about you, Ken. Feel better, and hope you'll be back in the studio soon. And we're going to be next week. We're going to be talking about
Windows
2, because
wait a second, didn't we do that last week?
We did Windows last week, and then of course, as always, we got to the end of the show and had another page worth of notes to talk about.
But part
Windows.
Of that is because the listeners, you guys, have come through with so many great questions, and that's what makes this much more fun for us at the same time. So please keep those calls and questions coming in, whether it be on the phone here with the radio station or on our website. We'll engage you with that. And upcoming, one of the shows we're going to have is dedicated strictly to the questions that have come in, and so that we can address those and hopefully generate, you know, some answers and questions from other people at the same time. One thing last on the healthy homes part, I know that at times it's easier just to turn a blind eye, stick your head in the sand and say it doesn't exist, it's not really an issue. It really is. And just, if anything, let this be motivation to you to say, you know, hopefully there's been some aha moments, like, oh, I can go check that, or I can make sure that's in place or whatever. Just allow this to be a helpful show for you, and don't turn away from it. Don't say it doesn't exist, because just because we don't give it attention doesn't mean it's not asking for our attention at the same time. So healthy homes are important. It's where you live throughout the entire year, and you want to make sure that's a safe, healthy place for you to live at the same time.
So we're going to get going and back to our weekends. We wish you all a very good weekend and a happy new year. We'll be back on the 2nd of January, the day after. We have this day after thing going on, day after Christmas, day after New Year's.
But it's Boxing Day, Mike Tyson's favorite day.
Boxing Day. Yeah. We'll talk about that later. Thank you all very much for listening. Yeah. Until next time, this is Chris West.
And Jim Bradley with House Calls Vermont.